Good evening. I call to order this July 23rd, 2024 meeting of the Blair Mayor and City Council. I am Mindy Rump, the Mayor of Blair, and I am pleased that you have joined us this evening. This is a public meeting and you are part of the process. I encourage you to participate, ask questions, and share your thoughts. I want you to feel comfortable and I will do everything that I can to make sure that your voice is heard. We have several rules to help us proceed with this meeting and I ask that you please keep them in mind. Please turn off your cell phones. If you need to take a call, step outside the chamber. When you wish to speak, simply raise your hand and I will recognize you and you can come forward to the podium. Our City Clerk, Brenda Wheeler, must record who you are, so please state your name, spell your last name, and state your address. Keep your remarks brief, about 3 minutes, so that others have the opportunity to speak. Please direct your remarks to either me, City Council, or to City staff. A copy of the Open Meetings Act has been posted by both exits, and we will begin tonight with a roll call of members.
Baker?
Here.
Paulson?
Here.
Anderson?
Here.
Wolf?
Here.
Willis?
Here.
Samuel? Fletcher?
Here.
Heiko?
Here.
All members present except Samuel.
Thank you. Would you please stand and join me for the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Item number 4, approval of the consent agenda.
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion and a second to approve the consent agenda. Please register your vote.
All council members present voting aye.
Motion passes. Item number 5. Consider approval of Tyrell, otherwise known as Ty Hernis, as Assistant Chief of EMS. Chief Leonard.
Good evening, Madam Mayor, City Council, City Staff. Fire Chief Bill Leonard, LEO, NARD, 1303 Maple Drive, Blair, Nebraska. Here tonight for approval. We tried this last month. Unfortunately, our member decided to step back. Tonight, we're going to bring up Ty Hernis. Ty has 12 years of active service with several departments, North Dakota, Nebraska City, most recently Arlington, which is, he is also a dual member. So he is a dual member with Blair and Arlington as well. Ty also works for the Nebraska Fire Marshal's Office as an inspector of nursing homes and hospitals. So, with your approval, I'd like to bring Tyrell Hernis up. And bring him up for approval for EMS of Blair Volunteer Fire and Rescue.
Does council have any questions?
Thank you for your service.
Yes, appreciate it.
Thank you for your dedication to our community.
Multiple communities.
Yeah.
Thank you. Do we have a motion?
I move we approve the appointment of Ty Hernis as Assistant Chief of EMS.
Second.
We have a motion and a second to approve the appointment of Tyrell Hernis as Assistant Chief of EMS. Please register your vote.
All council members present voting aye. Motion passes.
Congratulations. Thank you. Thank you.
Congratulations.
Congrats.
Thank you. Item number 6. Consider recommending approval of a new liquor license for FKG Groups Number 1 LLC doing business as Puff and Snuff, 658 South 19th Street, Blair, Nebraska, 68008, for a Class D liquor license, beer, wine, and spirits off sale only. Do we have the applicant here? Will the applicant come forward, please?
Yes, my name is Rishal Khan, and I was moved here in Elkhorn, Nebraska.
Can you spell your last name and give us your address?
Yes, my last name is K-H-A-N. And my address is 21155 Hartman Avenue, Elkhorn, Nebraska. So I just want to try to open that business here. So, you know, serve the No community.
Do we have any questions for Rashad?
What are your hours of business?
So we didn't decide yet. You know, it want to be like 8 in the morning to probably 10, maybe weeks 10. We don't know yet.
Are you open already?
No, ma'am.
No, okay.
I'm going to.
You're going to?
Yes, ma'am.
When do you expect to open?
Probably 2 or 3 weeks.
Okay. And what liquors and beers are you planning on selling?
Oh, sir. Actually, I'm new here. I didn't know that. I had to discuss with the vendor. You know, I'm brand new here. We don't know. I just moved from state of Iowa, so I know over there, but not here yet. You know, I want to meet with the other people, so the other companies. You know, over there, state. You know, we have to buy for from state for the liquor. Here is a company, so we have to deal with the companies. So then we find out.
Rashad, can I ask you, if you were not to get the liquor license tonight, would you still open just as a smoke shop?
I don't know.
Okay, no, that's all right. That's just a question.
So you have this type of establishment in Iowa, you said?
Yes.
And you sell wine and beer and spirits there?
Yes, I do.
And what cities?
Sir, I have a seven store. I have in Iowa City, Cedar Rapids, and City of Ottawa. Yes.
What's the approximate square footage of the business space you're moving into?
For this one,
yeah.
We want to be probably, and we put the application for 658, but we applied that, you know, the location. Then the landlord, they said they have a space, the other two empty was too, like a 650, and we want to extend that, like it want to be 2,600 square foot. It want to be, yes, 26.
Okay.
It's a 3-suite, and we mentioned the address 658. It want to be, you know, when we leave, we want to break that address. It want to be empty store. It want to be 650.
Okay.
Any other questions from the council? Thank you.
Thank you.
Any comments from the public? Having none, how would the council like to proceed?
Move to recommend approval of new liquor license for FKG Group Number 1 LLC DBA Puff and Snuff, 658 South 19th Street for Class D liquor license.
Second.
We have a motion, a second. Would you please register your vote?
Council members present voting nay, Hafer and Willis. Council members Heifel, Letcher, Paulson, Anderson, and Wolf voting yay.
Motion passes. Item number 7, presentation from Blair Strong Towns Group regarding the demonstration and survey they did during the Gateway to the West days. I believe we have Jake and Brian coming forward. Yes?
Good evening, Mayor.
Welcome.
Do I need to spell my name and give the address?
Oh, yeah, we make everybody.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Hello, MTI.
Everyone trust you.
It's 2129 Park Street, Blair, Nebraska.
And the same for Brian as well. Thank you.
Yes. Last name is spelled KNUDTSON, and I live at 1824 Colfax Street here in Blair.
Thank you.
We're going to be presenting a project that we did downtown. I know some of you saw it and were able to come and visit. But we're just going to be talking about that project really briefly. Strong Towns is a national organization, our local chapter. What we do is we gather together as citizens, residents, and we talk about the things that we do or the things that we're observing in our city. We don't, however, just want to complain about things that we would like to change. We actually want to take action on those. So we kind of have like a process, I call it the Strong Towns Theory of Change. The idea is to build a strong town. You humbly observe where people are struggling, and then you ask yourself, what's the next smallest thing I could do to change that, or that we could do to change that, and then you do that thing, and then you repeat the process. The idea is that as a bottom-up movement, incrementally doing those things over and over and over again creates this great collaborative project we call SAVE. So that's what we want to be part of. So it's a group of citizens, we just get together, and we talk about these things, and this is actually, the reason we did this project was, this is a way that we saw that people were struggling. Is that sometimes in our city, this not always designed for people to be outside of a car. So some places in the city, it's really hard to walk around. It's designed for traffic flow and speed. So this was a place that where we put our project, that we had, it was a temporary project. This is all temporary paint, it's not there anymore. You can kind of see some of the white lines. They, for some reason, endured. Well, white and purple, but everything else, you'll see in some of the next pictures, we got a rain and it washed most of it away. But the idea was we put in these curb extensions, and what we did, all we're doing is simulating a curb out here with paint, and we put out these cones, bollards, and the idea was that, the idea is that you can even see right here, this is where cars park, but this is where the people stand who are crossing the street. And so while traffic is going back here, these people are not visible. And so by moving the curb out here, this person is now able to see the cars that are coming by being able to see around the parked cars. The car can see the pedestrian. It also creates a shorter walking distance. So if you're juggling kids or pushing a stroller or a wheelchair, you now would have like about 20 feet less before you're out of traffic. Also, additionally, beyond that, it also slows cars down, because rather than taking a fast swooping turn, they actually have to slow down to make a sharper turn. And so, go ahead.
Did you sit up there at all and watch do cars actually go out further, wider, make turns and stuff?
As soon as we started putting down the paint, it started changing the way the behavior the drivers interacting at the intersection. When I was there just sweeping, I had one car come like right at me. I was wearing a bright vest, and she looked terrified. But yeah, I was just sweeping off the rocks, and before we had any paint down or cones or anything. And yeah, you basically, people kind of use this as turning right lanes. This curb right here has tire marks all over it, where you can see cars coming right over right where people stand. And so that's what this is how we observe people struggling, and this is one thing that we did just to kind of to change that. This was temporary. We didn't just do this though and paint these. We also stood out on the street on Friday night and Saturday, all day Saturday during Gateway to the West, and talked to people. So we were able to actually stand out there and point to our project, point to these curb extensions, and tell people it's not just art. It wasn't just paint on pavement. The idea was that this is actually a safety feature. And if we explained just what I explained to you, about how they change the behavior of the drivers, how they change the sight lines of people walking and people driving. And so we had conversations with people. Then we probably should have counted how many people I talked to. We assumed maybe like 300 people we talked to. We invited people to come. We had a little tent, and we put pins in a board. We gave them three pins, and we allowed them to put pins in intersections around the city where they think could use something like this, or some sort of safety feature, some sort of change. And that led to a lot of conversations. We heard all kinds of stories. We don't have time to share them all with you tonight, but it was really great just hearing people's stories and hearing where they thought that we needed to do some things different. We also had examples of things that we could change, of like how we could, where else we could do, like drawings of where we could do other curb extensions, other features, like raised crosswalks, or bollards in the street, ways we could change things. We were able to show some people. And lastly, we invited people to take a survey. And we had probably, I think we had about 115 people. We didn't count the people, but we counted the pins. So we had about 115 people put pins in our board, and we had 66 people take our survey. And Brian is actually going to share the results of the survey that we found.
Right, Jake. Okay, so like Jake said, 66 respondents to the survey. Every respondent answered every question, so the math is pretty easy for them. So the first section, we talked about pedestrian safety. And what we found is that people feel safe around their neighborhoods, but not necessarily once they leave their neighborhood. So to break it down, walking in your neighborhood, very safe. People are good with that. Once they have to start leaving their neighborhood, that's when they start to get to a little bit more ambivalent about safety. And then when we talk about destinations, places like the schools, like the parks, like work, like downtown, that's where we start to get people feeling more not safe than very safe. And looking at the data that they gave us, and I'm going to go through this fairly quick, feel free to stop me if anybody has questions. We've got a lot more data than this. But it really kind of comes down to cars drive fast, the intersections are not designed for pedestrians, and people are distracted. Those three things combined are not a good mix, especially when we have a town where kids are walking to school and stuff like that. You add into that, people have actually experienced or know people firsthand have experienced issues with pedestrian vehicle interactions. Honestly, I was shocked at how many times I heard those stories that I'd never heard before. You know, we know some of the bigger ones, and there's a lot of other ones that people shared with us. There's a bunch of comments on there that people shared through the survey. I'm not going to go through those. These slides are available to all of you and the public as well if they want to read these. So then we asked, what are your priorities? What would the impact be of these things? Two things really stood out with the priorities. What are the things that would encourage them to walk? Having safer places to walk and having nicer places to walk. So things like trails are huge there. Being able to not have to walk along the highway type of thing. And obviously being safe is obvious at this point. What impact would that have? How would it impact their lives? Obviously very huge. It would greatly improve most people's. In fact, honestly, a little surprising that nobody went down to the worsened side of things. It's actually kind of shocked because there's usually always people that just don't want change. So then next we asked about cycling safety. So cycling around town is a mode of transport that people can do. So how do they feel? Kind of the same set of questions we asked before. Here we're finding that people, even in their own neighborhoods, don't feel as safe cycling. So we see a much more towards the middle trend there. And as we move away to other parts of town and move to destinations, we see that it gets a little bit more balanced. So more in the middle overall is really the summary there. And so what are the priorities and the impact for people wanting to cycle? So improvements, obviously the trails is a big thing. Having more safety, having kids understand the best way to navigate these intersections through safety programs, having intersections that are designed for bikes, having protected bike lanes, having a place on the street that I feel safe. Because, you know, do I ride on that narrow sidewalk or do I ride on the street where people are going to be speeding? It's a horrible decision to make. So in the end, people definitely would say it would improve their lives. Having better attention to cycling in town. Again, some comments, I'll save those for people who want to dig into those deeper. So then we moved into traffic calming. If we want people to drive more cautiously, ideally a little bit slower, and be more on the lookout for pedestrians and cyclists, what are the things that people are willing to do? First off, speed is a major concern. Regardless of where you are in town, even in the neighborhoods, people are worried about how people drive too fast. This is one comment I will call out because we heard it multiple times and it actually came through in the survey, is that lowering the speed limits, people didn't feel would solve the problem because people speed already. If you take it from 30 to 25 and they're already driving 35, 40, doesn't matter at that point. So having these types of interventions become the main way to do that, to get people that actually want to drive slower. And some of it's just mental. If you've got street trees, which is in that top five, it narrows your visibility of the road and therefore naturally you're going to drive slower. So top five, the top four are all pretty even though the curb extensions, which Jake kind of described, pedestrian crossing islands, so having a safe space in the middle of the road where, you know, the two sides of traffic are going opposite directions. We've got some specific places where we think those will be perfect fits. Increased signage, we're already seeing some of that about to go in at the high school. And then raised crosswalks was actually one that surprised me. So if you're not familiar with a raised crosswalk, it's like a speed bump that's flat on the top and wider. And on either side, it has a ramp. So the cars go up and back down. One, it helps that pedestrians don't have to go down off the curb. So think of all the ADA ramps. Long term, if we did more of these, we'd have less ADA ramps because you'd go straight at the same level. It's also less jarring on a car because it's not the straight down like a normal speed bump would be. People seem to really gravitate towards that when we show them examples of that. So then, you know, the most important question, if people are asked to choose between, hey, you may not be able to move your car as easily, but you would get safer roads for pedestrians and cyclists, would you be supportive of that? And you can see that people are very supportive of that. Now, of course, we do have somebody that is opposed to that, and again, that's understandable. I'm not shocked by that at all, because some people don't ever think about walking or taking a bike. They want to drive where they want to drive as fast as they can get there. So, final question ended up being overall prioritization. If you had a chip, where would you play that chip? So we gave them a bunch of different options, asked in your neighborhood, around the schools, and in the downtown area. Oops. In the neighborhood, crosswalk safety and trips really, really kind of stand out there, but a pretty even distribution. When we get around schools, now we're starting to see the crosswalk safety really starting to showcase there. And less about the trails and more about speed and crossing the road again. Maybe that's because we have a lot of trails around the schools already, which is awesome, and people aren't as focused on that. But the other data really points to safety as being a concern there. And then when we talk about downtown, even more important that we get crosswalks. People don't like crossing Washington Street. And there's a lot of reasons for that. I think all of you have probably heard at some point or another. Which then takes us to the intersections. So like Jake said, we probably had around 115-ish people come through. That's really just taking the 358 pin, divide by three. I know there were people that said, I just want one pin because I have one intersection. I'm like, put three in there instead. You can see the example up there. We hope to have brought it here because it's actually very impactful to see where these pins distribute. But this is also pretty impactful. So no surprise to anybody is probably Washington and 19th Street is the top contender there. We have seen incidents there that have resulted in deaths. One fifth of the entire set of people said they wanted that intersection. No surprise there that Washington Street then becomes. So without going through all of these, the trend really is the highways and schools, parks, and why. So places where the kids are crossing the roads, big or small. The other thing I'll note on here is the stars are the ones that really are the intersections where kids cross. And you can see that all but three of them really meet that criteria. So kids are crossing those intersections. So that takes us to next steps. Any questions on the data? I do have all the detailed data if anybody wants to see the details of it, the individual questions and everything. This was really just kind of the summary of the high points. Okay, Dave?
when we thought about next steps, what would we'd like to see with this data, we really wanted to put our focus right here around schools and parks, mainly because we know that those are the places we can actually make a difference. Those other roads, a lot of these roads are state highways, which means our local control is pretty limited in those spaces, unfortunately, but that's just reality. And so we wanted our priorities were places, something we could do quick, inexpensive, and would be like adaptable. Like if we needed to change it, we could change it. It wouldn't have to be permanent. And so that's what we wanted to do. We'll show you some of our ideas, but these were the places that we prioritized. This is around the high school. All of these are really close to schools. These are by Lions Park and Arbor Park. And we'd like to at least do these two before August, before school starts. And the city crews are already going out there to put in those flashing lights, flashing crossing signs. And so we would love to see them go ahead and put paint and plastic out. And we'll show you those plans. Our second priority would be the highway. Now we know this is going to be quite a process. We're not pretending it wouldn't be, but at the same time, if we don't start, it'll never happen. And so I know that there's a safe route, or not safe route to school, but safe streets for all process with So maybe that will come up in that process, and maybe that would help move things along with the state and those on Washington Street, 19th Street, those kind of type of stuff. But let me show you some of the ideas that we talked about.
Before you go on, Jake, would it be a problem if we just go east on, let's see, Washington and 16th, right over here? If we just went east and west, stayed on 16th and not come on the highway, is that still a problem with the state?
We'll have to double check with them.
I mean, at least that'd be a start.
Yeah. I mean, keep in mind the right of way actually goes back to where the front of the buildings are. So you've got a little bit of area that comes back kind of right side of you. We'll do some checking on this.
Okay. And I'm noticing I'm missing slides of our presentation, so that's a little bit of a mistake.
We can share those.
We can share those with you directly. But in these two places, I'll just do my best to describe it. In these two places, crews are already going out there. These are three-lane streets, and especially on 10th and Nebraska. The third lane is a turning lane that won't be used because there's nowhere to turn. And so if we just like those in those pictures that we had up there, the plastic cones you can bolt or glue down to the pavement. Those are called thollards. You put two on the outside up on the curb, and you put some in the middle to kind of create a pedestrian island. And then right there, you've narrowed the vision and the space that drivers have to drive in. And it creates, when you create that narrowing, it actually coming into that space, that actually changes the way you feel about driving fast. Not just having a warning flashing light is fine and great, but that's an indication that you're supposed to slow down. It doesn't actually make you slow down. So the same feeling is like when you're driving on the interstate, and you can go past those orange signs, and you can go past, some of them even have flashing lights on them, but you drive right past them because you're thinking about where you're going or something you have to do that day. But then as soon as those cones come right up on your lane, you feel uncomfortable driving faster than 55 or whatever you're supposed to be going, whatever the speed limit is. So that's the kind of, when you begin narrowing the lanes, that's when you're actually using the space to change the behavior.
Jake, are you talking about those flexible, like in concrete mounted, so if a vehicle were to hit one, it bounces back up, but there's
a lot of things you can do. Yeah, okay. They definitely don't have to be steel or concrete.
Right.
They could be, I've seen some that are just steel posts with reflectors on them.
Mm-hmm.
Those would scratch your car up if you hit them. There's others that are, yeah, just they're,
reflect,
that you just,
yeah.
You hit them, they'll flop over, they're
visually
come back up.
Yeah.
They might put a little bit of white paint on your car, but not scratch it. Those are the bollards. And so it would create a pedestrian island in both of these places, because also on Jackson Street, by the high school parking lot, there's also no need for that turning. That turning lane doesn't go anywhere either. There's the soccer fields on the other side, and nobody's turning in theirs. So both those are crossing spaces. Both those are places where the city crews are already going out there to put signs. Our group, we would be happy to organize to help paint. We'd be willing to even screw on the bollards too, but I'm guessing you'd probably want the streets department to do that. But we'd be willing to help out. We'd be willing to organize and get all the volunteers there, put the paint on the ground.
We may have to have you show up with snow shovels, right? So two things concern me here is water flow, especially on Main Street. We have to deal with the rain runoff as it comes around those curbs. So elevating some of that stuff could be a challenge without very expensive storm sewer projects that got to go along with that, right? So we got to be careful not to alter the flow of the storm sewer that comes out the street, or we start to create puddles, create safety problems that are going to hurt people, could hydroplane. Secondly is when we start talking about bollards in the middle of the street, the guys are running by with a snowplow, and these, we got to be at least aware that, we put them in a place that are not going to impede snow removal when it comes along this step too, right? So I do like the idea of focusing on the first two. And Mark, I had a question for you. What's our crosswalk painting schedule now?
We're going to do it probably right 10 to 14 days before school starts.
No, I mean, is it annual? Is it quarterly?
Yeah, we do it twice a year.
Twice a year now. So, if we're, I mean, it, that would be an easy thing we can win right now. Like if they do it twice a year now and you're seeing that they aren't painted well, we can increase that to four times a year and make sure that's a great thing to call out, right? So easy ask, right? So I do like the idea of starting with some of this stuff easy. We'll test it out, but be careful. We there are other considerations that have to go along with that stuff too, as far as the, you know, the actual clearing of the snow, water, you know, storm sewer and stuff, or stormwater.
Yeah, and what we're asking isn't actually changing, going to change any elevation. Okay. Now, if you actually, if you redesigned it, if you actually decided, hey, we like this, we want to make this an actual, an actual curve, not like an extend, actually extend the curve line, then that would be something that would be all part of the engineering.
Yeah.
Of making that work.
Yeah, but
this would just be the extra
paint, whether it's interesting like this or just the lines or whatever. That's a great idea to start with. And again, I like the idea of trying the bollards at those two sites, and then before we, you know, let's try a little bit and see what works out and what
the trouble. Well, the great thing is that, like I said, if we realize, hey, these were too narrow, it didn't work for the snowplow.
Yeah,
you pick them up and you move.
Yep.
And then also because you've done it iteratively and incrementally, now you know exactly where the lines need to be when you do the street redesign and you actually do make it. You do decide you want to make it an actual pedestrian island with a raised median, curved lines, all that stuff. I mean, as far as plowing goes, I mean, I definitely understand you got to work with that. But I also I feel that, I mean, it snows 15-ish days a year, and yet we have kids going back and forth to school almost 200 days, twice a day. So I understand we need to make it work, but I know that cities make this stuff work.
Yeah.
And just, there's definitely a way to do it.
We want to consider, make sure we keep the snow removal and all the flow processing.
Even beyond that, like as far as if fire trucks can make the turn, and before you bolt them down, you can test run a fire truck through there and say, hey, will that... It will fit.
Yeah.
So, I'm sorry, we had more pictures for you, but they didn't make it on the slide. Like I said, we're a group that doesn't just like to complain, but we want to actually take action. We are happy to organize and make any of these things work and happen. We stay around. We're happy to talk about this.
Very well done.
Thank you.
Cool.
Thank you for doing this.
Thank you.
We appreciate both of you with your insight. And again, I have long said that we are not a complaint-driven community, but we are a concern-motivated community. And so I appreciate that you're pointing that out. You're not just complaining. You are coming with solutions. And that is extremely helpful. We appreciate that. And we know that you had to do it twice because Mother Nature took away the paint the night before the parade, and you guys had to go back that morning and repaint. So we appreciate that dedication. Thank you. Item number 8, consider resolution 2024-48, approving LB 840 application from Metonic Real Estate Solutions in the amount of $300,000 for the development of a multi-unit apartment complex. Mr. Rooks.
Hello, Mayor, City Council. Mike Rooks, Gateway Development, 11961 South 113th Avenue, Bethilda, Nebraska, 68046. I'm before you tonight to talk about a new LB 840 application that was in front of the advisory committee 2 weeks ago. We had Metonic Real Estate Solutions. They are a business out of Omaha, and they build multi-unit apartments around Nebraska and the Midwest. They are currently under contract with parcel land between Highway 133 and Highway 30, roughly 10 acres. And I'm going to kind of that guy right there. And I lost where I was. And they're looking to build 133 market rate apartments along with potential commercial area on this site. CapEx is roughly $26-27 million. There will be three full-time employees on site, not including everyone that's coming in to build this. When they came before the LB 840 committee, the committee recommended $300,000 in forgivable loan for this project. Now keep in mind, 2 months ago, we had Excel Development come in, and they were looking to do low-income housing, and they were approved for 16 units for $200,000. The committee believes it fits with what the City of Blair is looking for from the Housing Advisory Committee, and when you look at our overall housing study we did 2-3 years ago, this will put a really big dent in the deficit that we had for housing units. We needed almost 300 units, market rate. It's something that we're definitely looking for. When this was voted, it was voted favorably 6-0. With that, oh, sorry, someone asked me this earlier too. This is all contingent upon other funding and city approval. So this is one of the first steps. It's not one of the last. They will not receive any funding until it is all constructed. It's not beforehand or anything like that. With that, before I turn it over to President Cassie, do you have any questions for myself?
So this hasn't gone to Planning Commission yet?
No. Next month?
Well, LB 840 doesn't go to Planning Commission. All the platting, all those kinds of things, there's lots of steps that will be coming starting next month.
So next month.
Yeah. So yeah, this is just for the funding, not platting, zoning, none of that. This is just for the funding.
Mm-hmm. What are you looking at? Maybe it's a question for them. What are these units going to rent for? I know they're called upscale apartments. People are screaming for...
I would like to call them market rate apartments.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's more in line with what they are. But I think if those are the kind of questions we're going to have, I would like to introduce you to Cassie, President of Matane, and she can go through the different pictures we have on the screen and answer any of your questions. Cassie.
Good evening, Mayor, City Council members, Cassie Innes, INNESS, 12149 West Center Road, Omaha, Nebraska, 68144. Thank you for having us tonight. Again, my name is Cassie Innes, President of Matonic. We are a real estate investment firm that operates about 80 multifamily assets across the Midwest, or about 10,000 apartment units that span from South Dakota to Texas, Nebraska, Iowa, Missouri, and California. So I'm going to have my associate Aiden come up and speak a little bit about the community. Can we answer your questions about market rate apartments? But we are just very excited to be building, or potentially be building, in the Blair community. Matonic has developed about 1,700 apartment units in and around the Omaha MSA. So everywhere from Bellevue, Papillion, Gretna, Elkhorn, Midtown Omaha, over the last 5 years. So we are very used to working with city and municipalities. I will tell you that we've had nothing but wonderful experiences so far with Mike Brooks, Phil Green, and the other city staff. So it's been great just through our pre-development process, kind of working through our program here and also thinking through how we can help the community of Blair fill their deficit of housing. As you may know, no housing has been built in Blair community, multifamily housing, rental housing, since 2000. So that's almost 24 years that no new product has been brought to this market. And something that I find really interesting, I'm sure you all know this about your community, but the daytime population of Blair is about 14,000 people. The nighttime population is about 8,000 people. So you have all of these commuters who cannot find housing to live in Blair, who have to commute in during the day to work here. And so we'd love to help fulfill that deficit. So, Aiden?
Aiden Posey, POSEY, 12149 West Center Road, Omaha, Nebraska, 68144. So thank you, Cassie, and council members and mayor. This project, we've been working closely with the City of Blair and the Nebraska Department of Transportation to ensure that we have safe access both on Highway 30 and Highway 133. So we are working on plans with them. We're still in the preliminary planning process for this development. We're expected to close on the ground sometime in Q4. So Blair Crossing is projected to be about 133 market rate apartment units split across four different buildings. This building down here on the south side will also house a leasing office with a fitness center, and it will have an amenity deck with a pool and other small recreation like dog parks and anything else you can imagine. So we have a lot of green space built in here down low, and also on the southwest side of the site, we are programming a commercial pad for sale. So that is for a yet to be determined user, but right now we're programming a small pad that would fit about four retail bays. The site, like I said, 133 units. It has everywhere from studios to three bedrooms, which are ranging from 525 square feet on the studios up to about 1,250 square feet on the three bedrooms. And the market rate for those rents is about $1,100 to $1,900, and that is about 5% less than the city of Omaha. These, as everyone's talking about, these homes are anticipated to provide much needed housing to the city of Blair, both to current employers and future employers. So we firmly believe this housing project will be beneficial to the city of Blair, and we greatly appreciate your consideration for the project. So I'd love to answer any questions you might have. Sorry. So these are some preliminary renders of what the site may look like upon completion. Go through here, standard three-story. There will be garages available for rent, approximately eight for under two different buildings. So there will be 16 attached garages available, along with 22 detached garages available. This is expected to park at about 1.6 stalls per unit. It's not us.
No one talking about that.
Not a good look.
Are these renderings from some of your other projects? Or is this specific to Blair?
This is a rendering specific to Blair. There may be some change in final finishes, but this is a preliminary rendering.
Any other questions for Aiden?
No.
Well, I think it's exciting. I'm on the housing committee, like Paul is, and you know, it's what we've been talking about for months and months and months. So I appreciate you guys coming to Blair. And, you know, I'll vote for you.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate it.
Any other questions?
Aiden, what drew you to this site?
So maybe against popular opinion, but we actually were really excited about its location on the south side of Blair, being between Omaha and Blair, being on the south side. This artery, you know, Highway 133, gets a lot of traffic, and we think it's really great for our future residents to be able to both get to Blair or Omaha or other municipalities without creating more traffic throughout the city.
Okay.
And besides, the South Corridor has been identified as where most of our development growth is going to be anyway, so, yeah.
My only thing when I see this, not that we will solve this problem now, but also I'm sure you guys are looking at the same thing. Love the idea. It's great. Will we be able to, at some point, walking some, you know, to get out of that, other than a car, to get out of that location safely?
Yeah. It's a fantastic question. We're working really closely with the city on this project. This is actually going to be a public street right here to the south. So we'll be working with the city to determine how is the best way to walk to this site. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Very
Thank
fast.
You.
Thank you for that.
Any other questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
One thing I'd like to mention, with the $300,000, we would break that out. $240,000 would be for improvements on the site, and then the $60,000 would be for full-time employees.
So would be for what?
The full-time employees, the three employees there. And the last thing I will say, this is one of those projects that can be a catalyst for future growth in a corridor. And that's what we really think this is going to do for Highway 30 and definitely on the Highway 30 side, but even on 133, you start building this and you can see this steam roll down and start new developments coming through.
Did they purchase this, just this portion of land, or who owns on south of there where the bee farm used to be?
The two landowners right now, and we are in conversations with them, but no, they are just purchasing this area right now.
Okay.
Good question.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any comments from the public?
Fire Chief Joe Leonard. Just looking at the photo there with the buildings on the Highway 30 side, what is the offset of those buildings to the roadway just for fire department purposes?
So I would have to check with our engineering team what our setbacks are, but they are per code, whatever the setbacks need to be off the highway side.
Okay. Are there going to be units off that backside facing to the west?
So there will be units throughout the entire building, but they will be accessed in the interior, obviously, of the community. Okay. So yes, there will be units on the backside.
And these are all three-story apartment facilities?
Yep. And I know that host-pole is always, you know, a consideration when we're doing site planning, and that 150-foot host-pole distance. So we consider that. We consider the radii for a truck turning. And so I know that that was considered with our site design.
And then with preliminary type stuff with hydrants inside the
Yeah, so we just had a conversation this morning with the engineers. They're finalizing the design for fire safety purposes. In fact, they want to meet with somebody from the department to kind of go over those locations of fire hydrants. They've got radiuses. They'll show you for all those kind of things. So.
Thank you. Good questions, Chief. Any other comments from the public? Having none?
I'll introduce resolution 2024-48.
Resolution number 2024-48 was introduced by Councilmember Wolf, approving LV 840 application from Natonic Real Estate Solutions in the amount of $300,000 for the development of a multi-unit apartment complex.
Motion to adopt resolution 2024-48 as presented.
Second.
We have a motion and a second to adopt resolution number 2024-48 as presented. Please register your vote.
All council members present voting aye.
Motion passes. Item number 9, consider resolution 2024-49 approving partial forgiveness of the loan provided to KB Quality Meats, LLC from the Local Option Municipal Economic Development Program in the prorated amount of $35,200. Mr. Rooks.
Hello again.
Hello again.
Mike Rooks, Gateway Development, 11961 South 113th Avenue, Battalion, Nebraska, 68046. Again, we had our LV 840 Advisory Committee met 2 weeks ago, and one of the items that was brought up was KB Meats. Back in 2021, they were approved for a loan of $36,000 with the mindset of 3 full-time employees. The overall project was a $210,000 renovation expansion of their current facility, which fully happened. The one issue that no one knew about was COVID, and Novanesis and Dollar General opening and hiring a lot of people. So over the last, honestly, 4 years, it has been a struggle for them to keep their additional 3 full-time employees always on there. They've been averaging roughly 2.6 employees, so just a little bit over 2.5 full-time. I've talked to Kevin quite a few times on this, and you know, it just happens. Hey, we had them, and then they're gone. Something happened. So it's retail. I mean, it's turnover. And when you have some really high-paying jobs, starting out at $19-$20 an hour throughout Blair, it's tough to keep those in there. So when we met 2 weeks ago with the committee, the committee voted on was that we should forgive part of the loan, and we need to talk to the city and figure out what that looked like, because it wasn't fair for them to have to repay everything. So when we looked at this, we broke it out as $30,000 of that was for expansion, actual site build out and everything, and $6,000 of that was for their full-time employees. Like I said, 26, so when you divide everything out, what is left due on that loan was $800. So what we are advising, the committee is advising to do, is forgive the $35,200, and then at the end of his other LB 840, which is really soon, we would tack on that $800, and he would continue to pay until that was done. With that being said, I know the recipient is here, and Kevin, would you come up? If you have any questions for
me. Yeah, if you have specific questions, I mean,
I think I nailed it on the head.
Yeah, I don't have anything that new information for you, but if you've got a specific question.
And a key thing was we didn't want to set a precedent. I mean, we wanted to make sure there was some kind of payback in here. We just didn't want to forgive a loan. We're looking for that. We've never had this come up. We've had businesses go under before, and they have always fully paid back, but we never had anyone that, it was a struggle. And there's a lot of factors to this. There was job postings everywhere. He was doing everything he could. It was a tough couple of years to get someone hired, so.
Any other questions from council? No? Thank you. Any comments from the public? Having none, would someone like to introduce?
I'll introduce resolution number 2024-49.
Resolution number 2024-49 was introduced by Councilmember Willis, approving partial forgiveness of the loan provided to KB Quality Meats LLC from the Local Option Municipal Economic Development Program in the prorated amount of $35,200.
Make motion to adopt resolution number 2024-49 as presented.
Second.
We have a motion and a second to adopt resolution number 2024-49 as presented. Please register your vote.
All council members present voting aye.
Motion passes. Mr. Green.
Thank you. Thanks, guys. Well, it's a great night when I don't have to say anything until I get up for the report, so it's been good. Number one, I'd like to start off personally by just thanking the Strongtown Blair Group for their involvement here. It's a great community with great volunteers and people who continue to push us forward, which is wonderful. So thank you very much for that. Just a reminder to you, reminder to everyone who's in attendance here and to our citizens, that the annual budget workshop is coming up next Tuesday, so just a week from tonight, on July 30th. Again, it begins at 6 o'clock, and plan on a good two-hour meeting, probably. So 6 o'clock next Tuesday night. Just want to give you a little heads up and kind of a warning regarding all of the upcoming development that we're seeing begin to start. Number one, as most of you know, we've had the Housing Advisory Committee that's been meeting, and they will be coming next month in August to share all of their recommendations. They will be starting first with the Planning Commission. They actually will be meeting with the LB 840 Advisory Committee because many of the recommendations will be tapping into that source of income. And then they will be coming to you at the end of the month. Along with that, there are a wide variety of items that are going to the Planning Commission. The Blair Crossing, Metonic development is one of those. And so again, preliminary plat, rezoning. There will be a planned unit development coming probably in 1 or 2 months following that. There are lots of steps still to go through to see that development become a reality. Again, lots of good things that are in the works, and so excited about that. One of the things that's nearing completion is the South Bypass. Yeah. So we're excited to see that ultimately open up. We're anticipating that it's going to be sometime approximately the middle of August. So just a few more weeks from now. In fact, at the weekly meeting that's coming up later this week, we hope to be able to set the official ribbon cutting date. So we're currently planning right now for early September. Now, obviously, there's a gap between the middle of August and early September. And there's an ongoing discussion over whether it would be appropriate to open it up and then close it down for the ribbon cutting or not. Personally, I don't ever like to see something constructed and then you keep it closed and don't let people use it right away when it's available to be used, simply because you haven't had important people come to town and do the ribbon cutting. So I'm going to be pushing very, very hard to make sure that we can use it right away. And it'll be fairly easy to get officers out there to help with traffic control. This is a little bit more isolated than it was on Highway 133 when we did that ribbon cutting, if you remember when that happened. But you get traffic started there, it's a little harder to close that down than it will be for the bypass. So I anticipate that we'll get it open as soon as we can, let people start using it, and then look forward to some official ribbon cutting, like I said, approximately the first part of September.
Unless you have any questions for me, CJ is going to come up and give kind of a final report regarding the recent water testing issue, some of the lessons that we've learned, his interactions with the state. But any questions that you have for me? Thank you, CJ.
Thank you.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. So I just want to talk to Bill after all of this kind of settled down and we met with the state and reviewed everything that happened and just kind of go over what our findings were. So the members of NDEE were out Monday the 8th, so Monday after all of this went down. And we're out here for the better part of the day, met with Mark and Terry and I. We went through all of the records that the guys have taken leading up to that point and everything they did over that week. And gave us a, I thought it was going to be a more detailed report, but one page. So, which is corrective actions that we need to take, and I've listed those here. One thing that they were kind of questioning through all this is just what could have caused this. And at the end of the day, there isn't really any one thing that they can pinpoint. The things that they said could be possible were extreme flow. So if anybody was, if there was a fire that would cause the fire department drawing a lot of water all at once, or excessive flushing going on, nothing like that was taking place. The second thing they wanted us to look at, which we're going through right now, is all of the cross-connection surveys that the city does every 5 years. So those are sent out to all the homeowners. It's basically just a one-page questionnaire. If you have any swimming pools, boilers, irrigation, anything that's tied into the city water that may not have a backflow on, that would have been any possible cause for any bacteria or anything to get pulled back into the water system. So like I said, we're going through those. We don't see anything that's standing out. And then the last one was just to develop a better plan for flushing. As I know Phil had mentioned to you, one of the possible things is that where the area where this positive test was, with the intersection of Highway 75 and P35, there is a 12-inch line that goes all the way out to the OPPD site. And when OPPD was running, that got a constant turnover. So now that there's not as much use on that line, again, there's a potential that stagnant water could lead to issues. So in the past, once or twice a year, the guys would try to get a routine flush on everything in town. So we're gonna, one of our corrective actions will be to double or triple, quadruple some of those flushings on those dead lines, like that one down Highway 75. And what the recommendation from our engineering friends at HDR is that we should flush that 3 times the amount, the volume of water. So that math comes out to, we need to run about 250,000 gallons of water through that line each time we flush it, which is enough to fill the swimming pool.
CJ, I have a question.
Yeah.
It's not like that test was at the end of that pipe, it's correct. At the beginning.
Correct.
And so, I mean, we know that the 12-inch line is an issue, but if that's the entire problem, wouldn't that show up more towards the end of the line, not the start of it?
Well, of course, we didn't do any testing at the end, so we don't know what we would have found down there. The test station's closer. But obviously, water that sits in there just doesn't, can't maintain the chlorination that you would want to be able to see. Yep. And the only way to make sure that you've got fresh water throughout that whole line is to do exactly what they're recommending, and that is flush the whole line on a regular basis.
And just theoretically, and there's a lot of construction, a lot of boring, a lot of other things that have gone through here. Can we camera any of that line? I mean, is there a way to do that on a water main to look and see if we've got something poked through that's letting something through? You got a brand new intersection at the highway right there, the bypass, all that construction, all the new, do we have a leak someplace we don't know about?
Yeah, we definitely could TV things. I think, especially if there was water coming out, that much water, we would have found it by now.
Okay.
Typically water leaks don't hide that long before it comes up somewhere. But the idea is, since they really couldn't identify nothing that anybody working for the city did wrong, missed anything,
Flushing is our best option right now.
Be a little more proactive, I guess.
Yeah. We do hope, obviously, if we can see some development that would take place there in the Blair South development along Highway 75, that obviously would increase the water usage along that line. If we are able to move forward with our expansion with the rural water system and the new water tower, obviously that's going to be tied off that line. That will greatly enhance the flow through there. So we're hoping that it's not going to be a long-term issue of having a line that large, but it's just one of the unfortunate things when OPPD closed. We had a major line that really was installed simply for their purpose. Some of these other residential uses could tie off of it temporarily, and then you lose your large water user. And just from a safety standpoint, you know, ultimately, as he says, you know, several times a year, you're going to be flushing that line in quite a lot of water.
The other thing I know that, you know, was brought up was the communication throughout the whole process. So I know Bill and I talked after everybody was back and had a chance to review everything. One of the things that we've asked just internally, so the process with this testing, every week the guys do two tests, various parts of town. There's a whole sampling map list that's approved by the state a year in advance that they have to follow. So often you'll get a what I would consider a false positive that there could be coliform in the water. The state even says until it could have been something blown in when the guys went to put the cap on it. They could have got their finger in the water. Sampling errors, a dirty sampling station. So they always then take that, and the next day you resample plus two more. What we have asked is that since that happens often, just that Phil knows, I know, so that we can at least let the council know, hey, we've had this, we're taking action, taking the next steps. I think it's been close to 30 years since they've had a second sample come back. And I think that speaks to how well the guys take care of the system. So with that, we've also looked at adding some kind of alert system our website offers. We've also been talking to the Washington County Emergency Manager. They have a system too that we're going to meet with them. I'm not 100% sure how that works, but how that would look, but something very similar to an EMS alert you get on your phone for weather or the missing kids type of alerts. So those are two different things we're looking at. And then the other thing that Phil and I talked about is all of these notices that we sent out are all approved by the state. Those are in draft form already on their website, so we're going to kind of pre-populate some of those so that if and when we need to do something like this again, they're sitting there ready to go. And then the last thing that we're going to talk about probably next week at the budget hearing is looking at funding another position in City Hall and Public Works Department to kind of help coordinate some of this communication, the website, social media, and all that fun stuff. So any questions or anything?
I don't think so.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep. All right, motion to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
We have a motion, a second to adjourn the meeting. Please register your vote.
Wondering.
I don't have it. Board.
Not Rick.
Not Rick this time.
So moved. Aye.
Is it not working?
There we go.
There you go. Thank you. Meeting adjourned.